The American people have had enough. And we're going to talk about that on today's program. Plus, we got a special guest coming on the program today. Coming up next.
From the studios in Eugene, Oregon, it's Oregon Update with your hosts, Cliff and Robin. You can join Cliff and Robin by dialing 646-721-9887 or by email at talk@krbnradio.com. And now, here's your hosts, Cliff and Robin.
And
I have had enough.
I have had enough. It's my money. No.
Oh. Yes.
Anyways, welcome to a post-election program.
A post-election?
Post-election.
It sounds like we're done.
We are done. We'll see you later. See you next week. Remember, four people. No. No, I'm Robin. That's Cliff. And we're hoping you'll be there online as well. You can give us a call right now for the next 60 minutes. At 646.
That doesn't mean you have to sit there on the line for 60 minutes. You can call and just call us a name and go away if you want to.
You could.
Yeah.
But how would they do that, Cliff?
They would call by calling 646-721-9887 and then yell out your name. Of course, don't make it a nasty name because we'll spend the rest of the entire program beating up on you.
Yeah.
646 721-9887. That's easy.
Yes, you should try it. And in fact, as I jokingly were saying, but if you've never called a talk show before, Blog Talk Radio is really a good forum to get started because, we are broadcasting to the world, so don't be worried about that. Nothing to be worried about.
It's only 50 or 60 million people listening.
Yeah, no big deal. But the way it works is that dialing that number, you can listen to the show, by the way, live. When you dial that number, then if you decide you'd like to participate, you just push 1 on your phone. And what happens on this end is that your phone number comes up, and I'll go, "Hey, welcome to the program, area code such and such," and open the mic, and there you are. You
can talk to us.
Calabunga, dude. If you're also a little bit shy, you can join us in the chat room. Using Blog Talk Radio, you don't have to have. It's a free service as far as just having a screen name. You can just go in as guest. But if you want to comment or participate that way, you do have to have a screen name, which is free, by the way. There are some people that do that. And if you are...
It's amazing how much of this thing is free. It's kind of neat.
Yeah, it is. I kind of like it, except for the fact that we pay to bring this show to you. And
well, it's free for the customer.
It's free for
customer. Not free. Free for us, no.
Yes. But we do this every week. We've done this since 2009, and we get several hundred people listening per week on the archives, and that kind of makes it all worthwhile. Which, speaking of, if you are listening to this program or you missed the live show, you can listen to it on Blog Talk Radio and on iTunes and other apps around the area. But we're going to get into our topics here pretty quick. At 30 minutes into the program, we're going to have Ms. Jo Ray Perkins on the program with us. She's the former, she was running for U.S. Senate. She was a candidate for U.S. Senate in this last election, and so she's going to join us. Let her tell us her views on this recent Republican slaughter. I guess the Republicans really, they really they took the House and Senate back and tried to send a message because a lot of them are just – people just hate Obama so much and what he's done is that they didn't care who the Republican person was. They just wanted to fire the Democrat. But unfortunately, some people just don't get it. Like Harry Reid, thank God, was fired. But Reed is still being, I'm not going to say he's dorsal or dork, but, you know, his head is so inflated that he says that, well, the message is clear. They want us to work together. No, they don't. They want
to do
with you guys.
They do want us to work together. It would be nice. If we could just, you know, the idea is we should be at loggerheads and hate each other during an election. But when the election is over and we're actually governing, so to speak, we should do it together.
I'm trying to make a space here, sorry.
Make a space?
Well, yeah. I have, this teases me, I got 5 monitors. One of them is a tablet, which frees up a monitor screen. But Blog Talk Radio made some changes, and so the layout for the tablet doesn't work very good. So I'm trying to find a place to put it so I can free the screen up and still monitor the board. So apologize.
Too bad you can't just project it on a wall.
Don't give me any ideas. But yeah, the basically, as I was saying, the onslaught in the Senate, it was 52 Republicans to 46 Democrats, and in the House, 244 Republicans to 184 Democrats. And so that was kind of an interesting thing. There were 7 states that were primarily Democratic, Democrat. Arkansas, Colorado, Iowa, Montana, North Carolina, South Dakota, West Virginia, all used to be Democrat states, and they went Republican. Even Oregon, which I was really surprised, had more red than blue this time, because Oregon is pretty much a primarily Democratic state. But we still put Democrats back into office per se, but I can see that we're kind of changing a little bit, and I guess
let's hope that they're voting for someone that they believe in, voting for someone that they know, or voting for someone that they read something about and like what they read, but instead of just voting for name retention alone.
Yeah, I agree. But I think what it is that people are just tired of it. I mean, they're tired of hearing that, how bad the Republicans are, the way the country's going, the lies. In fact, I got one little audio here queued up to maybe kind of get things going here about lies and stuff. Here we go.
Under this mandate, the government is forcing people to spend money, fining you if you don't. How is that not a tax?
And that means that no matter how we reform health care, we will keep this promise to the American people. If you like your doctor, you will be able to keep your doctor, period. If you like your health care plan, you will be able to keep your health care plan, period. No one will take it away, no matter what.
Yeah, lies, everywhere lies.
He's on his period.
Yeah, period. But,
that's so stupid. The man, good and well that anything that comes out of his mouth is a lie, because I don't think he knows what he's saying most of the time. He doesn't do anything spur of the moment or off the cuff or anything like that. He has to have it written in front of him if he can see anything at all. And that, you don't know what these people are saying and what these people are putting in your mouth that you are then saying. He is so far from being believable in almost any way that is, I just can't believe it.
Well, the thing is, as I said in 2008, this guy is a used car salesman. You just, you listen to what he says, including, now they're saying that while he was on healthcare wanting a single-payer policy, and they were denying it. Well, in the 2008 elections, both he and Nancy Pelosi mentioned that his goal is to have single-payer coal. He said right in the 2008 elections that if you are a coal manufacturer, you're going to get taxed to death. You are going to get put out of business. And now people are going, oh, wow, he's against coal? Yeah, Cliff's dying in front of us, and we're alive. So, but in any other case, I mean, it's just been one lie after another lie after another lie, and I'm waiting for Cliff to come back.
Well, he just doesn't know what he's talking about.
I think he does know what he's talking about. The thing is, he's playing has played the American people as fools. And here's the thing, like the audio I just played. If you and I, as private citizens, own a business, and we went and promoted X to get you to sign up for our services, and got some scratching going on, for our services, and we bluntly misrepresented our services like Obamacare has done, there'd be one hell of a lawsuit.
I think he's banking on the fact that nobody's going to sue the president.
Yeah, in fact, and you're a little weak on your audio, in fact, Red Bull recently got sued because, remember, Red Bull used to have their promotion saying that, you know, Red Bull's got wings. Well, of course, I mean, anybody with common sense is going to know, you know, you drink this drink and you're not going to grow angel wings. Well, somebody sued Red Bull over that and actually won the case. And so it became a class action that if you drank Red Bull or bought Red Bull between this period and this period, you are entitled to $10 or $15 worth of product.
Or wings.
Because unless, of course, you actually did grow wings from drinking Red Bull, then in which case, you know, you don't get your $10. But, you know, that's kind of where things have gone. But here, Obama has come out and made promise after promise after promise. You know, like, you can keep your health care. If you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. People are losing their doctors. People are losing their health care. People are losing their jobs because their businesses are having to switch from full-time employment to part-time employment because of the increased cost in health care. Deductibles has risen over 100%. And because of the mandate, you know, like say in 2016 when the Obamacare goes into full effect, if you don't have, and I said this from in 2008, or, you know, during the elections, 2012, excuse me, when Obamacare came up, that it is, your insurance has to meet qualifying health care requirements. Otherwise, you will be fined. And that's why a lot of health care policies are being canceled now, is because it doesn't meet the federal minimum requirements. And so the fines can range anywhere from, in 2016, anywhere from $2,100 to, I think it's like 2% and up if you don't have health insurance.
See, that's the ridiculous part. Everything is becoming mandatory, like a driver's license. Everything is becoming mandatory. If I don't have a driver's license, I can't go anywhere. Well, that's ridiculous. I mean, a driver's license doesn't make me know how to drive. It's driver's training that makes me know how to drive. Now,
right,
if they want to say I can't go out and drive unless I have driver's training, and then even if they don't supply it, like in the schools, a lot of schools supply driver's training. Unfortunately, you still have to pay for it. But even if they didn't supply it and I had to buy it, I'd be happy with that. But they don't not only not supply it, but you have to have a driver's license and you have to have. It's just very disturbing to me anyway. Once you've got driver's training and once you know how to drive, you know how to drive. You don't have to do it over again.
And speaking of driving, as one of the initiatives in Oregon here, which is Measure 88, which is to allow illegal aliens, or politically correct saying undocumented, to drive, fails miserably, even though there was over $200,000 put in to urge people to vote yes, and half that to urge people to vote no, failed almost to a 2-to-1 measure, where 54,000 or 38% of the people voted in favor of allowing illegal aliens to get driver's cards, which is a 4-year card. In Oregon, driver's licenses are 8 years, but this would be a for your card with supposedly not all the privileges of a driver's license. 87,000, almost 88,000, 61% of the vote said overwhelmingly, no, we are not going to give illegals driver's licenses in Oregon.
Well, they can get driver's licenses, can't they?
No, not unless you are legal and documented in Oregon here. You cannot.
So we've got all these people out there driving without a license. And if they're driving without a license, who knows if he knows how to drive? I mean,
well, they shouldn't be driving. They shouldn't be driving, period, is the whole point. And if you get caught, you get pulled over, and you're driving without a license, you know, you're either A, going to get cited. But, I mean, it's not. I understand your point, is that you get a driver's license, at least you have some idea of the rules of the road, per se, because you have to at least pass the test. But on the other side of the coin, you know, these people aren't supposed to be here to begin with. Why should we bend the rules for privileges for them?
I think you're not bending the rules. You're making rules. You're not bending them. You're already, in first place, our driver's licenses are for 8 years, rather.
Right.
We're doing them for 4 years for them. Perhaps make them even less than that. Make them go in every year and get their driver's license if you want to. But, I mean, you got to do some sort of a thing so you know at least they do know how to drive. We got a lot of people on the highway that are aliens that don't know how to drive.
Yes.
I mean, they just simply don't know how to drive. And it doesn't make any difference to them. Why the hell should I give a damn if I know how to drive or not if I can't do it legally no matter what? So consequently, why bother? I'll just get out and go in the car and, you know, I don't. And it doesn't make any difference what age I am. I 12-year-old, so old, I can go out and drive. That's no sweat. You know, it's just ridiculous. You got to make some sort of limitations as to what you can do. If we've got all these limitations and all these strict rules that we have to jump through for a citizen to drive, and then to let the rest of the people just go, I'm very upset about that.
Yes. In fact, we'll see what our public thinks about that. We have a caller waiting on the line here. Open the line here just a second. Coming up on the half hour, Ms. Jo Rae Perkins again, former U.S. Senate, candidate for U.S. Senate. And with us right now is area code 678. Welcome to the program.
Hello. How are you, gentlemen? My name is Q from Atlanta.
Hi, Q. How you doing?
Life is great.
That's great.
I'm glad you guys have it.
Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Joe.
So what's on your mind today, Q?
You know, I'm glad you guys are having this intellectual debate or conversation. I'm not a fan of everything this president does, but numbers don't really lie. I work in medical, and I know that, you know, what's amazing to me, and I work in the billing financial side, you know, which is most of the doctors and nurses are not even on that side. So unless you're a doctor who's very astute on it, it's a whole nother language. But there's a lot of stuff that the Obamacare thing has done that's great for Americans. And people don't realize it because they're not on that side of it. And I'll just paraphrase by saying people have been sticking people for years,
right?
And a lot of aspects of the Obamacare, notice I said parts, are great. There's a lot of other stuff that's confusing and stupid, but it's great, and it dropped the deficit dramatically when it went into play.
Really?
So numbers-wise, you got to give that because, hey, you know, I'm not a Pelosi fan, wish she would go away. I'm not a Wasserman Schultz fan, wish she would go away. By nature, I'm a conservative, but I'm not a Republican. Been a conservative since HW. But I'm an American first, so anything that benefits your child and my child, that's what I'm going for. I'm not into cliques and groups. But conservative values like keeping stuff here, you know, that's what I'm all about. The globalization Republican, I'm not into that. That's futile to me. The other comment, And the one thing that's very good is something called meaningful use that you can look up. The reason why that a lot of the jumping around and losing the jobs, you can't really gauge it on that, because just like when NAFTA came around, NAFTA told you that they would create jobs and they would be better jobs, and all of a sudden you had employers who saw the loophole start dropping full-time employees for part-time employees. So you really can't say that that the Obamacare caused that portion of it, because that's a individual company type of deal. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't it doesn't really weigh, because most states 32 hours justifies 40. It just really doesn't. But the meaningful use part is great. A lot of the health care stuff has dropped. People don't understand, when you do an annual, you're not going to have the health care you had last year. The percentages shift. This is prior Obamacare. So when it comes to, you know, people are losing their health care, you always lose your health care. You lose it every year. The only thing is, dramatically, if you're not able to cover the basic things, percentage that is basic for everybody, let's say you had a cut on your wrist. Okay, now your doctor is not allowed to charge you $500 for a cut on your wrist when it only costs $125 to stitch it.
Right.
So if that's losing, then yeah, you are losing. And if your doctor does not want to participate in something like that, he'd rather charge you the $500, but you just didn't know because you've been going to him for 10 years, then yeah, you are going to lose him on that regard, because meaningful use says, hey, doctor, why does he need a $500 stitch as opposed to a $125 stitch?
Exactly.
So
the negotiations that the insurance companies
right.
do. On your example, you know, if you pay cash, maybe $500, but they negotiate with insurance companies that only insurance companies only pay $100 for the same service.
Right. Which is why now, and again, I do the billing side, the financial, which is now when a patient comes in and there's something that doesn't cover, we tell them straight up, hey, if you want this particular thing, you got to come out of pocket X. Your insurance is only covering X.
Mm-hmm.
And prior to Obamacare, it used to be on the form you sign when you come and visit the doctor. There was a little small print underneath on every form that says, if your insurance does not cover, you're going to be on the chain.
Right.
So that's that. And lastly, the immigrant worker scenario. Reagan started this nonsense with this whole visa worker. And Ross Perot, my favorite guy ever, Ross Perot talked about this long ago. He said, look, it would be better for you to give stuff. Well, he actually was trashing NAFTA when he said this. But he went back to Reagan. He said, it's always been better since Reagan for you to give the what he termed as white trash in Kentucky or the poor blacks in L.A., give them an extra couple of dollars, rather than trying to send it outside for a couple of cheap labor because you want somebody to pick some tomatoes for cheap. That's ridiculous.
Right.
It's going to ultimately hurt you. And that's what we have had with this visa work program through the years since Reagan. You've had people come and establish families the way NAFTA is doing with Pakistan and Indians, and the unseen Russian and Bosnian. Now, I'm just going to be quiet after this. It's very funny to me how people always say, well, EBT and, you know, so on and so forth. And I'm like, well, you guys do realize Russians and Bosnians are the number one perpetrators of EBT, right? They come over here, they have a house right next to you. They look as Caucasian as you do, but they are raping the free entitlement system like never before. It's amazing. I have a brother-in-law that's at one. But I'm interested to hear what you guys think.
That's interesting. I didn't realize there was that much of a problem that, you know, you say your next-door neighbor may be the one doing it. Is it that big a problem?
Well, it depends. I mean, like, for example, I had to go on food stamps for 3 months because I used it what it was used for. And when I signed up, they ran my Social Security number, and my name was Heidi. So I had to run down to the Social Security office, make sure that I still wasn't Heidi. I was Robin.
Okay, I don't understand.
In other words, somebody used my social to get benefits, and they didn't check on that. And
well, so they use your social number, Social Security number, and give it a different name?
No, they gave benefits to somebody under my social. They didn't check to make sure that the person using my number was really the person who belonged to that Social Security number. So when I went down, signed up temporarily for it, and it came up that my name was Heidi Rodriguez, it's kind of like it didn't match. Because, you know,
I wonder how you can check on that. I mean, I've never bothered to check and see if anybody else was using my Social Security number.
Well, you can go down to the Social Security office, and which is what I did, and ask them, am I still me? And they gave me a form saying, yes, you are, which totally confused the people down there. But, McKee, let me ask you this real quick. You said you do billing?
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Yep.
Are you seeing, because I'm hearing that deductibles and everything, especially after the first of the year, are skyrocketing. Are you seeing that as well in the medical fields?
That's always going to be, even before this Affordable Care Act crap came around. It's always going to have that. The problem is you have a twofold scenario, which is why I don't like the Pelosi whole figure it out after you vote for it crap.
Right.
the Republicans wanted certain things that now they're trying to say is Obama's, and you're going to have the deductible shoot up. Only because there are certain things that, put it this way, if you want some nice insurance, you just got to pay for it.
Right.
If you want, if you got a nice company that you with, and you want some nice insurance, it's actually going to be cheaper, and your deductible is not going to be all that. But if you're trying to ride the system in the middle, trying to do just enough, you got to be aware of some of these percentages. And I'm going to tell you the way in dental. Here's a real nice trick to find out whether you have I'm answering your question, but I'm just answering it in a billing way. This is a nice trick for you to find out if you have some dental, so some good dental. There's something called an impacted tooth.
Uh-huh.
It's probably just as expensive or more expensive than having your wisdom dealt with, okay? When you look at the percentages before you sign up on how much something is covered and what your deductible is, look for the impacted tooth on how much is covered, what your deductible is, and what have you, and compare it to another insurance offline, and you'll see the answer to your question. These deductibles are per carrier, and you know, if you see where, hey, I only had to pay $5 per visit, and, you know, I get covered for blah, blah, blah. Wow. But my impacted tooth doesn't cover crap. You're going to get hit. Now, if you say, hey, I pay $20 per visit, and your friend is like, man, you crazy. I only pay $5. And you got all this other stuff, and then you look at your impacted tooth. Oh, that's covered at 80%. Okay. That's how these deductibles work. You can judge it based on that and what you're paying per visit, because there's no more. The reason companies were able to do that prior is because they were denying people left and right. Now you can't do that. So before, I can charge you $10, $5 a visit and have that deductible be what you thought it was, because I was denying you after a year because I felt what you were claiming didn't fit what I wanted to pay you and all that type of stuff. Now, that wasn't with you. That was with your other coworkers. You know what I'm saying? So, or in the case of medical, I was denying Billy, which is the whole John Q movie thing. Even though he's been paying year after year, I'm going to deny his son because now he has a situation I don't want to cover.
Now you can't do that no more. So that's why you're seeing the movement of money. Sorry to be long-winded.
No, that's fine. And you're right. That is, I mean, there are some advantages to the Obamacare, like the extended in how long somebody can stay on your insurance, your child, and supposedly, you know, they can't drop you for certain diseases or whatever, or what they call it,
pre-condition.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, because you know, at the end of the day, with medical, if Republicans wanted to fix it before Obama even came along, they could have. They could have did simple stuff to fix it. You know what I'm saying? Like not being able to sue a lawyer. I mean, sue a doctor for these frivolous nonsense. Somebody said to me, a very angry lady, she said, well, why is it cheaper in other countries? I said, because you can't sue.
Yeah.
And a light bulb went off in her head. I said, no, you can't sue a doctor in other countries unless he did something dramatically stupid like left a scalpel inside of you. But all these little, it didn't come out the way I wanted it to come out. You can't sue for that. And then someone else said to me, well, what about in Canada? People are coming here. People are coming here because they want to. The way Canada works, and I used to live in Seattle, the way Canada works is if you're breathing, that's the number one thing. We got to get you care immediately. If you just broke a bone, be a warrior. You know, take the rod, let me cast it, and we're going to get it scanned. Well, the scanning is going to take 6 weeks. And you're healing. I mean, if I get it scanned right now, it's no difference.
Right.
And that's what people get caught up in. And, you know, I want my surgery right now. Well, you don't need necessarily your surgery right now. Well, I think it's important because I might be, yeah, but they've already checked. And, you know, you're in the healing phase. You're not bleeding all over the place. You don't have a blood problem. You want your surgery right now, and you're willing to pay an extra $1,200,000 to get it done. I understand that. You can't do it in Canada because it's a backlog. I understand that. And that's your right. As I said earlier, if you want to pay that type of thing for a super great insurance or pay out the pocket, that's your right to do. But you can't make it seem like Canada has terrible health care. Nah, that's just 100,000 or 200,000 experiences versus millions who don't have an issue.
Exactly.
But okay, I'm interested to hear what you guys got to think about the visa thing I had posed to you. That's really why I called.
Okay. We got a guest coming on. If you want, I'll go ahead and put you on hold.
Thank you, sir.
Program.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Yeah, put you on hold here for a second. Okay, and again, you too can call into the program, 646-721-9887. And we're going to, we got Ms. Jo Ray Perkins is going to come online here in just a moment. We try a new feature with Blog Talk Radio, which has allowed us to call her. So we're going to try that and see how well that works. So please bear with us here.
So it's interesting to see what...
Unfortunately, it has to... Ringing. I do apologize for that. There's a way to do this, but it takes another computer to do it. So.
Hello, this is Jo Ray.
Hi, Jo Ray. This is Cliff and Robin with KRBN. How are you doing today?
Hey, I am fabulous, Robin. How have you been?
We've been doing pretty good. We have a caller on the line, too. She's just listening to us, and... if he wants to chime in, if you're in the chat room queue, go ahead and let us know, and we'll open the line. But we want to get your take on the recent elections, and also see how you've been doing since the overall, how the Republicans taken the House,
yeah.
And just overall, and how you've been since you were running for office.
Yeah, well, you know, nationally, wonderful. Oregon. You know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over again and expecting different results.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not quite sure why Kitzhaber got elected again for a fourth term. His third term was probably not constitutionally legal. His ethics are questionable, to say the least. His policies, well, he's been violating his oath of office to uphold the Constitution of Oregon. So, but you know, the voters spoke. Nationally, I'm thrilled on the measures. Some I'm happy with, some I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
So.
You know, you're speaking of the voters voted, and if the voters are not bothering to pay attention to what's going on, let me rephrase this. What they vote for and what we think they should vote for could be two different things. I mean, a lot of times voters are just not paying attention. They're voting name recognition. That's all.
Well, that's true, and it's really frustrating. That's why the reelection rate historically has been close to 90%. But here's the bigger problem. In Oregon, we had over 800,000 registered voters not vote.
Right.
They are, there are people in other countries that stand in line for hours for the privilege of casting their vote, and they do it in countries where they strongly suspect that it's rigged. And yet they still vote, and they show their purple thumb proudly because they got to cast their vote. And we have men and women who have died over, you know, thousands and thousands and millions that have died over the years for our freedom. And we have 800,000 Oregonians. You can't even say who stay home because, my word, people, you get your ballots in the mail. All you got to do is open up the voter's guide, take a look, and cast a vote. So what happens is 50%. Roughly, I think the voter turnout was 50, less than 60% overall.
Right.
So that means that the voters, huh?
The voter turnout was pretty sad overall, but
yeah, the voter turnout is. So by not voting, you're voting. I mean, you know, when you don't, you know, you actually your voice is being heard by your non-vote, and.
Well, it's kind of like what Obama was saying, is that those who voted, I hear you, and those who didn't vote, I hear you too.
Right. But the problem is, what message did they really send? I mean, you can say, I hear you. But the problem is hold on just a second. I'm unloading my car. There we go. The problem is, we don't know what message they're saying. So he can say, I hear you, but you don't know what they're saying. But, you know, are they saying, I don't know, I don't understand what's going on, so I'm not going to vote? Are they saying, I'm so frustrated with the system, I'm not going to vote, which is an oxymoron? Are they saying, I don't like any of the candidates, so I'm not going to vote? So then, does that mean that the one that you like the least is still elected?
That's interesting that you asked that, because if you don't vote, And you say then you're still being heard. What's being heard? If you're not voting, you're not giving an opinion as to whom you like or dislike. How do you decide to give that?
Exactly. I actually know two people who wrote my name in for U.S. Senate here in Oregon because they didn't like Merkley. They didn't like Webby. They liked me. They voted for me. And you know, from a that feels good standpoint, that feels good. But I didn't want to see Merkley elected standpoint, it's like, God, you guys wasted two votes. So, hold on just a second. I'm on the phone. Sorry, grandkids. So, there's pros and cons to that.
People keep telling me if I didn't vote, I'm giving my vote away. I don't think that's true. I mean, if I didn't vote, I'm not giving it to anyone. And
actually, you are. You are, especially when if an incumbent is involved. What you just did is you actually gave that incumbent two votes, because that's one less vote that they have to overcome, because my vote would offset your vote if we voted for different candidates. Plus, that's one less that they have to get to go ahead by one. So when you don't vote for the person that you really do not want to see get elected, you essentially just gave them two votes. So it...
Vote for people I don't like?
Pardon?
I say I should vote for people I don't like them?
You should vote for the person that you... You should vote for the person that you... that you like more than the other person. Because nobody's perfect. You know, let's take... I'm gonna pick on Dr. Webby. Personally, I happen to like Monica Webby. Some of her views, I don't agree with. She was my opponent in the primary. I voted for her. Her name went on, or her sign was in our yard. I Facebooked, should please vote for Monica. You know, but I liked Merkley less, a lot less. So, so that's sometimes that's what we have to look at, because we're not going to agree with a candidate 100% of the time. My word, do we even agree with our spouses 100% of the time? No, but we're still married to them. For those people that are married or, you know, with somebody.
Well, I think that kind of my unofficial survey with people that I meet in person, more and more people are not involved in politics. They don't want anything to do in politics. So when they do go out and vote, they go, okay, who do I know? Oh, Merkley, I remember that name. I don't know anything about anybody else, so that's who I'm going to vote for.
Robin, that is pure laziness. The voter's guide is mailed to every voter's home. They get their ballots. All they got to do is open up the voter's guide. So many people are on the internet. Do a quick search. I ignore the stuff that comes in the mail unless it's about a candidate who says, this is my policies, this is what I've done, this is what I plan to do. If it's a piece that says, this is what my opponent has done, boo on my opponent, I totally ignore that because it's biased. It has to be biased. You know, that's just the nature of the game. So you have to become informed people. People, whether they like it or not, they are involved with politics. They go to the gas pump. Politicians decide how much they're paying for federal and state gas tax. They buy cigarettes. Some government official decided cigarette tax. They bring home a paycheck. Some government official decided how much they were not going to bring home in their paycheck. So we are affected whether we like it or not. And so for people to say, well, I don't want to be politically active, be a citizen and be involved.
The examples you just gave are kind of more of a transparent type of thing. Like you go to the gas pump, you pay. I don't even know how much it is per gallon, but you just go in there, you buy your fuel and go on with it. But like what's coming up with Obamacare is different in most other things the federal government does, because usually what the federal government does doesn't affect you directly or are not in your face as much as Obamacare is. You know, now with the mandates, it's a law, you're going to have to do it or you're going to lose your tax refund at the end of the year. And so it's bringing it more home about your actual direct involvement with the federal government.
It really does. And I was listening to the radio yesterday, and I don't remember which radio person said what I'm about to say, but he said, why is it that it's up to the business owner, the employer, to deduct your tax? What if everybody got 100% paycheck, and then they had to mail in their tax? How much more involved would the average person be that is uninvolved? Because now they're seeing it.
Right.
And I'm going, what a brilliant thought. As long as we're going to have an income tax system, what a brilliant thought. And then see, because like you said, you don't see it. And by the way, federally it's 15 cents a gallon on the federal gas tax. But we don't see it.
Right.
Exactly. So,
I think if you left it up to the individual to decide how much tax they're going to pay and figure it out for themselves, you'd see a drastic reduction in income tax because a lot of people just wouldn't pay it.
Well, we had the discussion before we could change that by going to a consumption tax, and then you get to say how much you're going to pay in tax by going to a consumption tax. That's what this country used to have.
But that doesn't give you a chance to say whether you're going to pay it or not. You're going to
pay
it if it's a consumption tax.
Yeah, you're going to pay on certain things. Yeah. I mean,
right.
I wouldn't tax our food that we eat, but if I go out and I buy a new car or a used car from a dealership, just, you know, in California, they have a sales tax. You go buy a car, you're going to pay a sales tax on that car of 8 or 9%. And people know that. They understand that. They want to live in California. They're going to live by the, you know, these are the rules in California. So people will talk with their checkbooks or their bank accounts. So, but there's got to be a way to get more and more people involved and care about this country. My biggest concern is that we're going to get to a point to where we have more politicians, a la Jerry Brown and John Kitzhaber, who totally ignore what the state laws say and find a workaround and decide that they're going to be a dictator and run again. I mean, what would happen if Obama declared martial law and said there's not going to be any elections? Who's going to stop the man?
It is in the Constitution. I mean, under FEMA's regulations, all he has to do is declare a national emergency.
So what would stop him?
There's something about it.
Huh?
Let's hope we have, 800 people in the Congress or 600 people in
You have 535 people in the Congress, 435 in the House, and 100 in the Senate. So you have 535 elected officials in the U.S. Congress.
So what
would they do?
They can do something about it
if they want to.
No,
that's the whole point of this election is why some people are just voting Republican. They didn't care who the person was. They wanted to get the Democrats out of office because they had enough, like you said, send a message. But unfortunately, like what Harry Reid was saying, to quote, the message is clear. They want us to work together. No, they don't. But
that's not the message. The message is you're not listening to the American people. If that is
right.
The message, they're you know, 6 years of, well, the U.S. Congress has had the Democrat control since President Bush's last 2 years. So now Obama's going through what Bush went through his last 2 years in the midterm elections. So we've already had 8 years of Democrat control in the House, in the Senate, and then of course in the House in 2012, the Republicans took over the House.
Right.
So, but still, there.
Well, just hopefully the Republicans are going to get. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Robin.
I was just going to say that, like a lot of the Republicans ran on abolishing Obamacare, and now after they got elected, they're going, well, maybe we can just kind of work to fix it.
Well, the problem is if they work, and I'm for getting rid of the Affordable Care Act, if they passed a bill in the House and Senate to completely wipe that away and put in place a process to get back, but with a better plan, Obama would veto it, and he does not. We don't have a veto-proof majority in the House and the Senate, and that's why they're saying we can't do anything. Obama has said, "Well, send me something that I would sign." Well, you're not saying what you would sign. This is your this is your bill. So what is it? Send me something that you're going to sign. I don't know what you would sign. So how can I send to you what I don't know what you would do? Why go through the exercise?
Well, and like
because he's going to veto it.
One of our listeners who's listening to us on hold at the moment brought up he works billings in billing for healthcare, and he says there are some parts of Obamacare that are actually good, which is true. There are a few good mandates about it, but do we need a law that is over 2,000 pages thick that requires, you know, almost bankruptcy of individuals, you know, because we're seeing healthcare costs skyrocket for people. Their deductibles are more than doubling. And, you know, in other words, getting back to, yes, having health care for everybody be great. Other countries do it. We can give people coverage, in my opinion, and use what works in other countries and don't use what doesn't work without having to do this type of aid. Go ahead.
Here's the problem, Robin. Those other countries are going bankrupt. They can't afford it. They're not giving care. And we've already seen this happen in Oregon or in the United States. Doctors, if they overprescribe certain medications, like to too many patients, not to one individual, they are going to get fined. They're getting taxed on medical devices. They are getting less and less care. It costs, they're only getting 30 cents on the dollar when they're on the Medicaid program, so an Oregon health plan. They're getting 30 cents on the dollar in the amount of paperwork they have to do. The doctors are losing money. They can't afford it. And in the meantime, the patient's care is going down because the doctors are being told, you've got to do less and less care. This whole thing started, and it would take us days and weeks to go through it all, hours at the very least, back in the 1970s with HMO. That's when this all started. And doctors were actually rewarded by the insurance companies for doing less care. And this has just exacerbated that system. So when we look at socialized medicine, sure, we can have the government pay for it all, and you get to pay an 80% income tax.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to keep 80% of my paycheck. I'd like to keep more, but...
Yeah, I totally agree.
I think that's one of the biggest problems that we have right now. We're all harping and screaming and yelling about something that really we're the best off in the world. We pay less taxes than almost anybody else, especially health in client taxes. We don't pay as much as anybody else, and yet we expect just as much help and just as many services.
Yeah, there's a clear disconnect because all we hear is, well, Europe has this, you know, Germany and France and Spain, they have all this. Canada has it. Great Britain has it. Why don't we have it? Because there's a price. Yeah.
Yeah, but is there a system that if you're not working per se and you don't fall under the federal minimum guidelines that you're going to get charged a couple thousand dollars for health care because you couldn't afford it?
Yeah. My daughter, she can't afford health insurance. She does not have health insurance. By the time she pays for her rent and her utilities and her vehicle payment, we're paying her car insurance. We're paying her cell phone bill to help her out.
Right.
She, you know, and we're living on my husband's income. I'm not working. I haven't found any employment yet. You just need me back on that one Facebook page, but. You know, and we've been helping our son out and his family and his wife, and we're doing everything that we can, which is really what family should be doing. And I don't complain about it. It's just that's a fact, you know. And here, our daughter, she can't afford the premium.
Well, and I got a question for you. If I remember right, you used to own a business. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
And my husband does.
Okay, so if you were to start a business today from scratch, as you know it. Generally, rule of thumb is 2 or 3 years before you start taking money out of a business, you know, for yourself to really get a business going. And it's expensive. And a lot of times you run negative. You know, I'm speaking from my own experience as a former business owner. If I was going to start a business, say, in 2015 or 2016, for example, and I'm putting all my savings into this business and just living, you know, on top ramen to try and make it, well, the thing is, healthcare, I probably would not be paying $400, $500, $600, $700, $800 a month for because I don't have that money because I'm not generating a profit yet. But now I'm looking at least in 2016, a $2,100 penalty for not having insurance on top of trying to scrape by and get this business going. So I would be hesitant. Go ahead.
Except if you're self-employed and you're starting a business, and you're not drawing a salary or making a certain amount of money, if you're making less than $25,000 a year as a couple, you automatically qualify for the Oregon Health Plan. So you would be insured.
But aren't they looking at your gross income? Because depending on how you set up your business, whether you're an individual or...
Yeah. Well, no, they're looking at your net. They can't look at your gross. They look at the net.
Okay.
On a self-employed person. So, but still, the point is that you'd want to be able to have something, and not have to be concerned about penalties.
Exactly. I guess what I'm thinking back is like, and this is about 20 years ago when I had my business. I was doing like 40. Well, I had 8 employees, the overhead, and I sometimes my employees took home more than I did.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I guess, that's what I'm relating it to.
Yeah, so the problem is that with the mandates that have come forth with what businesses are required to do, we've seen with the Affordable Care Act, I'll pick on O'Reilly's Auto Parts.
Okay.
With O'Reilly's Auto Parts, they cut all their employees back to no more than 25 hours a week. Because the Affordable Care Act says if you have more than 50 employees and anybody that works more than 30 hours a week, you must pay for health insurance. And all those employees got their hours cut back.
By law, they have to have insurance. Where it doesn't matter who pays for it.
And now they can't afford the insurance that by law they're supposed to have because they lost hours. They lost 5 to 15 hours a week. That's a lot of money.
Yes. Especially because it takes two incomes now just to be able to survive. And like you said,
mm-hmm.
Jobs are not that plentiful in some areas.
No, they're not. In fact, I just found out that a job that I applied for here in Albany, I met the person who got the job, and she said that there are 200, or at least 200 applicants for the job that she got.
At the very least. Speaking of work, we're down to the last couple of minutes. Joe Ray, are you going to run again?
I am. I will be filing to run for the 4th Congressional District.
All right. When are you going to be announcing that?
I just did.
You heard it here.
You heard it there publicly first, folks. I will be working on, I've got to clean up the rest of our Senate campaign and close out our Senate account. With the FEC, and then get the paperwork started and sent in to start on the House seat. So a rolling stone gathers no moss, and I'm moving. So we've got a republic to save, and I'm going to do my part, do what I can.
And you have an open invitation to come back on this program anytime you'd like, Joey.
Thank you. Appreciate what you guys are doing. Have a great rest of your evening.
And you too.
Thank
right,
you.
And,
talk to you guys later. Okay.
Thank you, Joe Ray. As Joe Ray Perkins, former candidate for U.S. Senate, and you heard it here first. Yeah, filing again, and we'll hopefully have her back on the program more. We're out of time. Again, appreciate Q for calling. And anybody else, how has this election affected you? What's your opinion on it? Send an email to arbnradio.com. We want to hear from you. And we'll be back again next week. Cliff, any final words?
I'm pretty well done. I've pretty well said it all.
Which is interesting coming from Cliff. No, it's been very interesting, and hopefully the Republicans are getting, like I said, not getting so cocky that they're going to remember what people said. But we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Be sure to check us out on the internet at www.krbnradio.com. Or email us with your show ideas at talk@krbnradio.com. This is KRBN Internet News Talk Radio.